You are listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Of all the fossil fuels and other energy sources that run our country today, perhaps the most important is also the most old-fashioned, coal. Coal has fueled America for centuries, and it was coal that made this country the most powerful nation on earth. And part of that story begins right here in Central Virginia. Robert Pepe Jones is a Chesterfield County historian and the director of the Midlothian Mines and Railroads Foundation, and he joins us in the studio. Pepe, when did coal begin as a fuel source in Virginia?
In Virginia, around 1698, we know that Huguenot settlers in the area where Salais Creek enters the James River in what's now northwest Chesterfield County, they were using coal that they had discovered in their smithing operations. Governor Byrd visited the site in 1702. He, along with Colonel Epps and Captain Randolph, came up to the site, discovered that they were using the coal, and he promptly confiscated 344 acres from the Huguenots to go to the Crown's use. We have a long history, and the first coal in America was discovered there. Well, not discovered there, but first used there. And they've been mining coal in there. They started there ever since. The original coal mines were very simple affairs where perhaps just you and I would dig a pit as deep as we could, and we would bell it out a little bit like a bell jar. We got down as far as we dared, extracted all the coal we could out of that, came out of that hole, went over about 50 feet, and did the same process over again. So they were very simple affairs. There wasn't any engineering involved in it. It was just a couple of guys with pick shovels and buckets and ladders.
And they went on to pit mines?
Then they went on to pit mines. As they came further south from the river, two things happened. One, they were getting away from their source of transportation, which was the James River. Originally, they would mine the coal, put it on a barge, go down the James River. They would get to the falls of the James. The coal had to be taken off the boat, put onto a cart, and then taken around the falls back down to near where Ancaro's Landing sits today, then put on a boat and then shipped. And Midlothian coal was shipped to every colony in North America and all throughout the Caribbean that were on islands that were controlled by the British.
Give us a kind of a mental picture of how extensive it ultimately was, how extensive the coal deposits
were.
Well,
it did become, well, we are part of what's called the Great Triassic Basin. And this coal basin is a roughly oblong football-shaped type of basin that starts down in Amelia County, and it tapers off again in Hanover County. It is about 55 miles long, and it varies from 12 to 17 miles in width. And the Midlothian Basin, where they were doing all of that coal mining, is right on the very eastern fringe of that huge coal basin. Eventually, coal was mined in Goochland County, in Powhatan County, in Amelia, and then there were some huge mines in the Clover Hill section of Chesterfield County. But the mining in Midlothian was the first, and originally what's now the village of Midlothian then was just known simply as the coal fields. As they kept going further south to find coal, they had to go deeper and deeper. And it was in the early part of the 1700s that they had to go to depths where we did not know how to do it. And that's when they brought over engineers from Great Britain who had been doing deep coal mining to show them how to do mostly the ventilation systems. And then they were ventilating pretty much the same way the Romans had done. You would dig a shaft. You would hit the coal seam and then dig straight through the coal till you finally hit bottom, which would be a granite base there. And from the bottom granite base, then you would start digging your tunnels to mine the coal. as you got a certain ways away from your first shaft, you would then dig another up shaft. And then you would have a fire at that second shaft where the heat of the fire would draw fresh air down your original shaft and it would go up your new shaft. The problem with this is that when you're in a coal mine, you have all sorts of flammable gases that are there. You have radon, you have hydrogen gas, you have something called black damp, which is a combination of nitrogen and carbon dioxide, all very flammable processes. And to keep the air moving, you have a fire source down there. Eventually, they would hang baskets, flaming baskets, in that updraft shaft to at least keep the gases that were down low away from the fire so you didn't have an explosion. But it's a dangerous process now. It was considerably dangerous, more dangerous 200-odd years ago.
Pepe, your title is the director of the Midlothian Mines and Railroads Foundation. It begs the question, as they got further away from the James, how they got the coal from the mine to a transportation center.
The road that led from the coal fields to Richmond was Old Buckingham Road. There's a portion of that still left. It's a very circuitous little road, and in the winter, the road was way too muddy to carry carts of coal into Richmond, so they would put it on the back of mules. In the summer, they could use the Old Buckingham Road, but when you're carrying 4 tons of coal down a dirt road, it's going to create ruts, it's going to create dust. It was just a nightmare for everybody concerned. The only other way was then to haul it back to the river, put it on the boats. By the late 1700s, we had gotten a portion of the Kanawha Canal had been built, so they would take it across the river on the canal, down into Richmond through the Great Shiplock Basin, back into the river, and then put it on boats. But you still had to handle this thing several times doing it either way. So in 1802, a number of the coal mining owners and folks that lived in the village of the coal fields petitioned the General Assembly for a graveled road to go from Midlothian to Manchester. And in only 2 years, that road was completed. Would love to have a General Assembly back that could do something like that in 2 years. But we had a 13-mile fully graveled road, and that was Midlothian Turnpike. That took the coal directly from the mines to the docks. There was a charge of 9 cents a bushel to haul coal. Took roughly 25 bushels of coal to make a ton. It worked a whole lot better for the coal miners until they discovered that as that cart went down a gravel road for 13 miles and bounced along on the rocks, by the time they got to the dock, for every ton of coal they had, they wound up with about 1,800 pounds of coal and 200 pounds of coal dust that they couldn't do anything with, but they just paid 9 cents a bushel for it. More than likely, they just got tossed into the river, and they continued to know there's got to be a better way than this. So in the early 1830s, they contacted Claudius Crozet. Crozet was an engineer in Napoleon's army and was actually captured by the Russian army in Napoleon's tour of Russia in 1815-13. He was not released from a Russian prison until 1816. This was a year after Napoleon died. So he comes to America and becomes the chief engineer for the state of Virginia. He was asked to survey and build a gravity railroad from Midlothian to Manchester, and he said, I've got to go out to Waynesboro. I've been contacted to build a railroad tunnel through Afton Mountain, which he did. But he did survey it first, said, yes, it can be done.
What is a gravity railroad?
Well, it's just that very thing. From Midlothian to the docks in Manchester, it's virtually all downhill the entire way. So they would load up the coal cars with a few mules, was all it took to carry it because of the grade, and they would clickety-clack down. It was just a wood planks with a piece of strap iron track, and they would go down to Manchester that way.
Now, to be clear, the mules weren't driving the train or pauling it. They were in the car ready to take the train back up the hill.
There were a number of mules that would be put into the rear. Only a couple would needed to carry it because it was all downhill, but when they got to the docks and unloaded, they needed to haul all these cars back, and it took more than a couple mules. So they would unhitch the mules who rode down to Richmond, and then they would have a team of 8 to 12 mules that would bring all those empties back. The only problem they had with this entire gravity system was right at the village Midlothian where Falling Creek comes through, and there's a huge hill that you must climb just before you enter the village of Midlothian. So there they came up with what was called the Great Cycloidal Railway, which was a double track line, and they took the idea from a windlass off of a ship, where they would have a number of full coal cars attached with a rope and drum system to a number of empty cars that were at the bottom of the hill of equal weight. And as the full cars went down the hill, the empty ones would come to the top. As the full cars got to the bottom, they reversed the process and then got the full cars to the top of the hill. So once they got to where the Panera Bread sits today, from there on in, it was a gravity track all the way down. There is about a 200-foot-long section of the rail bid that remains. It's right behind the Pocono Station Shopping Center, and it starts there, and it dies out in the back parking lot of Brown Chevrolet, but that is the only good piece of the road that's left.
Did the railroad follow Midlothian Turnpike?
It pretty well followed where Midlothian Turnpike goes today. You can see when you turn onto South Chippenham Parkway off of Midlothian Turnpike, you can see a little bit of the railroad beds there. But one of the things that we are looking to do when we build our railroad museum, and that's my task now, is to raise money to build a museum for the coal mining, a separate museum for the railroads, and then a third building that would be an educational center for both the coal mines and the railroads, where we can show the geology that's done, the engineering for the mining and the railroads that occurred else through that, and also the social business too.
Do you have a location?
Yes. We have built across from. There's a local family that has donated 44 acres back in 2004 to Chesterfield County, and this is the site of the ruins of the Grove Shaft Mine. And that mine was originally installed in 1836, and then across Woolridge Road is the park system that still is in private hands. But we have built there a replica of a headstock, which was the apparatus to lower mini material into the mine and then bring the coal up. And it actually sits directly over top of the site of what was called the Middle Shaft Mine. The Middle Shaft and Grove Shaft were four mines that were dug in 1836 by the Wooldridge family and their partners, the Clark family. Now, the Wooldridge family home is where Crab Louie's restaurant sits today. That was Abraham Wooldridge's home. The Clark home sat where Stonehenge Country Club sits today on that very site. And they got together and formed the Mid-Lothian Coal Mining and Manufacturing Company. Their Mid-Lothian shaft, which is just to the north of the headstock construction, that mine was 777 feet deep, and they hit a seam of coal there 50 feet thick. When they found that bonanza, they abandoned work in their other three mines and put all their eggs into that one basket. In 1840, that mine alone was producing one-fourth of all the coal that came out of Chesterfield County. It was by far the big kid on the block. The area, by that time, with the railroad being there, the name had been changed from the coal fields to coal field station. The Midlothian mine had a major explosion there in 1855 that killed 55 miners. And in 1857, through an accident where they cut into a common wall with a long abandoned mine, the mine flooded. So now you have the biggest coal producer in Chesterfield County is now out of commission. So they brought in, constructed a 500 horsepower steam driven water pump. And nothing like that had ever been done or attempted in mining anywhere. So what was going on at Midlothian made newspapers all up and down the East Coast of America, and it made mining news all over the world. So if you were a mining engineer in Poland, Germany, France, Wales, Scotland, wherever, you got ticket on a passage and came over to Midlothian to see this because you'd never seen it before and you didn't know if you'd ever see it again. And because of that mining disaster and Midlothian making the news, Air Village then became known as Midlothian, and what was known as the Midlothian Shaft we now refer to as the Pump Shaft. So all of this came from a mining disaster.
I don't want to take away from anything you said, Pepe Jones, but as people drive Midlothian Turnpike today, they are driving a road that was made specifically to haul coal.
Specifically to haul coal. Coal mining, as you said earlier, it was the first major industry in this country. The mines there in Midlothian, not only were we the first, starting around the late 1600s, but for about till 1740, we were the only coal mines. They knew, actually, Jefferson, in his Notes of Virginia of 1787, speaks of coal deposits around what's today modern-day Pittsburgh. They knew coal was there. Marquette and Joliet found coal traveling the Mississippi. They just had, prior to that, they had no way to get the coal anywhere. So even though they knew the coal was there at Pittsburgh, they didn't have railroads out there. They didn't have a transportation system to get it to another market. Actually, Moncure Robinson, who is the fellow who built the Chesterfield Railroad, that gravity railroad, had built a railroad or two in Pennsylvania prior to coming to Virginia. He built four of the first five railroads in Virginia, the Chesterfield being his first. He also built the first railroad connecting Richmond to Petersburg. And in that, he had a wooden timber trestle bridge going across the James River Valley that was 2,800 feet long. He also built the first railroad from Richmond to what's now Roanoke. When he left Virginia, he went back to Pennsylvania, and he built a little thing called the Reading Railroad. And in the process of building the Reading, he realized that there was probably more money in owning railroads than just going through the woods and building these things. So he started investing into railroads, and by the time he died, he was one of the wealthiest folks in America. But he was a Richmond-born engineer, actually started at William & Mary. He was dismissed from William & Mary. He and 20 other students had gotten into an argument with the dean over the cost of a course. And the dean said, if you don't like it, just go home. So he finished his formal education at the Sorbonne in Paris.
Were these railroads specifically for freight and coal, or did they also take passengers?
You could also take passengers on the gravity railroad, and actually the Chesterfield Railroad from 1831 to the early 1850s was classified as the most prosperous railroad in the world, not just the United States, but the world's most prosperous. Their investors were paid back full in 14 months. And this railroad went along fine until the early 1850s, when the Richmond and Danville Railroad was constructed. It ran more in between what currently Midlothian Turnpike and the James River. It was north of the Chesterfield Railroad, and it was had steam engines to operate. And so that new technology of steam engines that came in put the Chesterfield Railroad out of business.
Pepe Jones, earlier you described the extents of the coal fields in central Virginia from Chesterfield into what is today Henrico, Goochland. How did those other mines get their coal to a transport point?
Well, by the time the Clover Hill mines came in, steam engines were starting to go everywhere. And so there were five separate trains that hauled from Clover Hill. There was a line that went from Farmville. It came through Clover Hill and then on to Richmond. And the Carbon Hill mines and the ones there in Goochland, there was a small train. Well, first they did the same thing as Chesterfield did. They brought it to the river and went down the river or the Kanawha Canal. But then trains came in through Henrico County into what's now Goochland County, from the old Lorain train station, which is kind of where Lauderdale Road comes out now to Patterson Avenue, and they would go on to Richmond from there. But really from the 1850s on, railroads, of course, became king in America, which they all ran on coal. So one hand fed the other. Of course, it was Chesterfield coal for the most part coming out of Midlothian that was used for the foundry that was at West Ham. They made arms for George Washington's army. They made arms for the Continental Army during the War of 1812. And it was coal from Chesterfield that fueled the Tredegar Iron Works during the Civil War. After the Civil War, railroads had been extended all out into Buckhannon, to Wise, to Craig County, and all through there. And so there you found anthracite coal rather than the bituminous coal that we have here. It was a much higher quality coal, burned cleaner, less sulfur, and the transportation systems were there then to haul the coal from the far western part of Virginia and what's now West Virginia onto market there in Newport News.
Are you describing why today we don't see any coal mining in
yes.
the Richmond metro area?
Yes, it started to die out really right after the Civil War was over. There were a number of, well, the R.S. Burroughs Company came in after the Civil War. The George Wooldridge, the grandson of the founder, they say that in 1865 that he had barrels of money, but it was all Confederate. So he is, on one day of April, he is a multimillionaire. The very next day, he doesn't have a dime to his name.
But to be clear about it, coal mining in central Virginia did not fail because it either played out or because of the Civil War. They found better coal elsewhere.
They found better coal elsewhere.
And they had the transportation.
And they had the transportation. That was key. And that was key to Pittsburgh also. Once they got transportation there, or really once they got transportation into the Pittsburgh area, Pennsylvania was producing probably 20 times the amount of coal a year that what came out of Virginia.
Is there still coal to be found here, if anybody looked?
There is still coal. Actually, I know from a 1934 article, my next-door neighbor, that home was built in 1934, and they were digging a well. The well at my house is only 60 feet deep, and we got all the water we needed. At that house, they dug down 75 feet, and they hit a 17-foot-thick seam of coal. And they had to go on through that before they could actually get water. So there's still plenty of coal in Midlothian and all throughout this basin. It's just that still better coal out there. And so around 1930, coal mining came to an end for all intents and purposes in Midlothian.
So here in central Virginia, we're no longer mining coal, but I'm sure you can name places that are named for coal-producing places.
There's right in Midlothian, there's Coal Field Road. In Clover Hill, there's Coal Borough Road. Even where the American Family Fitness sits today in the village of Midlothian, that is on Coalfield Station Road. So there are a number of places.
And even in north of the James River, Gayton had mines, Deep Run, Springfield.
Yes, and there is Henrico County has a little park around a school that was there for the coal mining children. All around Gayton, right where Tuckahoe Creek comes into the James River, mines all through there. There were a few mines out near where Luck Stone Quarry is. They went that far into Goochland County. But the largest mines in Goochland were along Gayton Road and down around Tuckahoe Creek.
And perhaps some of that coal is still there today, but not worth what the coal elsewhere. There's a huge basin to our immediate west, under the Appalachians.
Yes, and it's still there, but as late as 1920, the Murphy Coal Company out of West Virginia came into Midlothian. They owned a number of mines in West Virginia and Western Virginia. Their thought was that if they could get the Midlothian mines operating and get enough coal extracted from it, it would save them 3 cents a ton transportation cost from Roanoke to Richmond. They came in, they mined for about 5 years. I think their best year they got out 50,000 tons. This is from an area that one mine alone was producing 200,000 tons a year. So they never got the production in 1925 that they were getting in 1885. And about 1925 or 26, they decided they would pack things up. They sent most of the people home, but they kept a couple of folks here running water pumps at least to keep the thing dry in case they changed their mind and wanted to come back.
Pepe, if you had your druthers, when would your three museums be up and running?
I'm hoping to be under construction for the coal mining museum by fall of next year. We are going to various organizations now, foundations and private industries, soliciting funds for this. That would be my hope among hopes. Followed, I would hope, that by the next year with the Railroad Museum and then the Educational Center. And we will use the Coal Mine Museum as an educational center also until we get the other one built. One of the things that we want to do in the Railroad Museum is to have a diorama showing the original route of the Chesterfield Railroad from Midlothian to Manchester, the Richmond and Danville original route, and then beside it have a diorama of Chesterfield and Richmond in 2015 with these railroad routes imposed on the new one, so that when you go down Reams Road, you can say, all right, this is where the railroad came through, although there's no traces of it there today. But it'd give you a good idea of how things have changed from 1831 to 2015.
Robert Pepe Jones is a Chesterfield County historian. He's the director of the Midlothian Mines and Railroads Foundation, and he's joining us in the studio to talk about coal. You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.